Well, the power of music isn't news to anyone. The ability to communicate and facilitate feelings and bring people together has been used throughout human history. But diplomat and singer-songwriter Fred Smith knows this better than most, having used music and lyrics to develop Australia's relationships with countries such as Papua New Guinea and Afghanistan in times of upheaval. And Fred's my guest today. Welcome, Fred.
Hi, Kath.
Now, you're heading to St Albans this weekend for the folk festival there. You've performed in front of many different kinds of crowds, soldiers in the Middle East, villagers in Bougainville. Just how does a folk festival crowd compare?
The great thing about folk festival crowds is they sit down and shut up.
They actually listen to you.
They listen to stories and words. People responded to music very differently in different countries, I found. In Bougainville, there was no appetite for my tragic ballads, for example. They loved reggae, anything that made them move. But folkies, they like to sit there and listen to stories. Some of them even knit while they're listening.
Yeah, wow. And what about soldiers in the Middle East? How did they respond to your music?
They got into it. You know, I mean, one soldier, I used to play concerts there a lot on the multinational base in Tarinkat. We'd put together bands on a Saturday night. You know, there'd be a Dutch nurse singing and the quartermaster would play guitar and one of the Afghan guys would play on his drums and his djembe. And, you know, there was nothing else going on a Saturday night in Tarinkat. And so there'd be quite an audience of Australian, American and Dutch soldiers. And often I found myself singing songs that directly talked to the experience they were having. And one soldier at one point said to me that I thought I'd read his diaries. So it was obviously something that resonated. And so I was mixing up my songs about the war itself with more songs that were more in the vein of, I would say, drinking songs.
Mm, a really powerful connection for you as an artist, I imagine, when you do have those conversations with people who are enjoying your music.
Yeah, it's rich, you know, it's rich. I would describe the music that I write and my performances as conversational.
Mm. So apart from it obviously earning you money and recognition, what does music give to you? What does it mean to you?
Well, apart from a point of connection with people, it's an outlet. You know, I've worked in some fairly extreme environments and found myself writing songs about what I've seen and heard and the experience of people around me, not so much while I'm there working, but often when I get out on leave. So it seems to be a kind of release valve, a way of organizing my experiences, both factually and emotionally in my brain.
Mm. Is it a release valve that allows you to reflect, but as well sometimes allows you to forget?
Yes, I think that's right. I came back in September of 2021 from working at Kabul International Airport on the evacuation of Kabul. And when I got into the Beigest Hotel in Adelaide for hotel quarantine 2 weeks, I was sleeping sort of 2 hours a night and getting a lot of bad dreams. But as I began to write it all out, the experience in prose and poetry and song, the dreams got better, really. So it really is a way of, as I said, kind of organising it both intellectually and emotionally.
Mm. We're going to play a song from your most recent album, Look, called Long, Long Way. Before we do that, can you tell us a little bit about this one?
Well, this is a song about my skyrocketing career as a folk singer. You know, the thing about folk music is you can make hundreds of dollars playing folk music annually, and I started out playing in pubs where people were drinking and not particularly listening, but then eventually people started listening, and that obliged me to start to think a bit more about what I was talking about. Anyway, here it is. It's a long way to the middle if you want to play folk music.
Well, if you've just joined us on RN Drive, my guest today is singer-songwriter Fred Smith. I think it's time to hear some of this music now. This is A Long, Long Way.
My name is Freddy, you can call me Fred. Pick this guitar, try to make a little bread. The one chord, four chord, five chord show. And I come a long way, now I'm here to say, got a long, long way to go.
got a bit better on a mandolin. Not a riddle on a fiddle with an idiot grin. Cause guitar picking don't make much dough. Still I have traveled by land and air, from the streets of London to Scarborough Fair, from Indianapolis to Idaho. And I come a long way from here to say, different when I started back then. The boot and the flogger and the wig and the pen, where the folk were drinking in their thinking men's clothes. The room was noisy and the people were pissed. If I said something subtle, it was generally missed. So I just sang oi, ay, oi, ay, oh. Now the folk all listen when I talk or sing, so I feel obliged to say intelligent things for the lady sitting knitting in the second last row. Come a long way, now here to say, got a long, long way to go. And if I'm running out of things to say, I'll lift my harmonica and start to play. Yes, I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll suck it. Dylan, yes, I sure like Bob. But Dylan was a willin', I'd take his job, singing sad-eyed lady of the desolation road. But Dylan ain't willing, and Dylan ain't dead, and I got me a monopoly on being Fred. So I sing about the things I've seen and I know, like boats and sailing and civil war and drinking whiskey and chasing whores. Put your kiddies in the car, bring him along to the show. They'll probably hate it, but you know they're wrong. And they duck under the table if you try to sing along to the oi, ay, oi, ay, oi, ay, oh. Because it's just folk music and it's better than it sounds. This is just folk music with chloroform. So grab your partner and a do-si-do. And I come a long way, now I'm here to say, got a long, long way to go. Yes, I come a long way, now I'm here to say, got a long, long way to go.
Fred, let's now talk about your time in Afghanistan, where you spent a lot of your working life. You also were inspired to write music from there. You were sent over there as one of the first diplomats to work alongside soldiers there. What was that like for you? And what was? How did you feel as a result of being over there?
Well, you know, I was pretty daunted and a little afraid as I went in. I'd worked in conflict zones before, Bougainville and Solomon Islands, but nothing as hot a conflict as Afghanistan. And my concerns were vindicated on the day I arrived when I attended a ramp service for a young soldier named Ben Ronaldo, who'd been killed in an IED strike that morning. And so I suddenly realised that this was real, and that there were people out there who wanted to kill us. But as I settled into working in the base, it became a fascinating and very rich experience. I mean, you're living in a very intense environment, doing difficult, ambiguous work, and living and sleeping in a shipping container with seven other soldiers, and you get to know people very quickly. And I made some very rich friendships there, amongst Australian soldiers, Dutch soldiers, Americans, but also amongst the Afghans and the interpreters that we worked with. So overall, it was a rich experience, although it's got to be said that it didn't end well, the Afghanistan intervention, and those of us who invested a lot in it. Certainly grieve the way it ended.
With the ending as it was, how do you reflect upon your time there and the connection that you still have to Afghanistan?
Well, yeah, it's interesting you ask. As it fades into the rearview mirror of my life, I still remain very connected with it. Remain connected to our staff down in, who live now in Dandenong, our former staff who got out, and I still spend a lot of my time out touring a show called Sparrows of Kabul, which tells the story of our time in Afghanistan. So I think soon it's time to move on, which is why I put this new album out. It's called Look, which has no songs about Afghanistan on it at all. But certainly it was a rich experience in many ways, and one that's changed my life for sure.
Do you still have communication with those there?
A couple of people still there, yeah. It's not good there, you know. In the Taliban, we're not ultimately as vindictive as we thought they would be, but at the same time, they're not competent to run a modern economy or to respond to the drought, which is, you know, the weather conditions and the drought that's unfolded since. And as a consequence, you know, there are something like 21 million people in humanitarian need, which means they're hungry.
Yeah, indeed. You have been described as this sort of unofficial historian for Australia's involvement in Afghanistan. You mentioned the withdrawal before. What do you see as the legacy that Australia left over there before troops pulled out in 2021?
Well, we were part of an international mission that brought enormous change to Afghanistan. You know, in the Taliban years between 1996 and 2001, the place was very much closed down and very much in darkness. There was no communications in and out to speak of. But we arrived, and our presence sort of certainly initiated a war for control of territory with the Taliban, which resulted in, you know, hundreds of thousands of deaths. And we can't overlook that. But at the same time, you know, we increased the number of kids in school from 1 million to 9.2 million, including 3.8 million girls. Mm. We built a health system which increased life expectancy from 44 to 61. And we gave a new generation a glimpse of a better life. Now, a lot of those people now live in the West, and in Australia and Europe and the United States, but a lot remain there and would be disappointed that vision never came to being. But we did change Afghanistan profoundly. The lights are now on with communication and internet, and people can see in and people can see out, and that's obviously something. It's a very different country from what we found.
Given today is Anzac Day, and looking back over your career, you know, you're not a serviceman, but you were a diplomat and you spent a lot of time with the army over the years. How do you reflect upon Anzac Day? Do you celebrate it? What does it mean to you?
Oh, look, it's simply a time to remember those who did some hard yards in difficult places. It's time to remember those who died there, who perished. And I know that's important to soldiers working at risk of death. I was in the mess one afternoon in Derrincott, and a soldier, a big sergeant, came up to me one day and said, "Are you Fred Smith?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "Did you write that song, Dust of Uruzgan?" I said, "Yes, I did." And he said, pointing out to the green zone, "If I get slotted out there, you're going to write a song about me." So I know that it's important to people serving those contexts to know that they're remembered if they perish. But it's also, I think, an opportunity to remember those who made it back and who are making sense now of the very difficult work they did in very difficult circumstances.
You mention the Dust of Uruzgan, your album. There's a, you know, your song, A Sapper's Lullaby. It's a story too of remembrance partly as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, In terms of difficult work in difficult places, the sappers exemplified that. Their job in Afghanistan was to walk out ahead of a patrol wearing, 40 kilograms of body armor and 20 kilograms of weapons and equipment and a metal detector and a dog on a leash. And their job was to walk slowly down the road looking for improvised explosive devices, bombs hidden in the road, inching forward very slowly so as not to miss anything. And it was incredibly difficult and dangerous work, especially in a 45-degree heat. Not surprisingly, we lost 7 sappers in our time in southern Afghanistan, including a couple of young guys, on the morning of the 7th of June 2010, when sappers Darren Smith and Jacob Morland and their dog Herbie were killed by an IED in the Mirabad Valley. And I went to their funeral, their ramp ceremony, 3 days later, and the afternoon after that ramp ceremony, I wrote the song Sapper's Lullaby.
Well, Fred, it's been wonderful speaking with you. Let's take a listen now to A Sapper's Lullaby.
Up from the road to and down past the gate, out to the flight line. We stood in the sun, slouch hat and gun, as 2 caskets passed us by and followed the padre onto the hook and out into the pale summer sky. We walked back to Poppy's, then went back to work with the dust still in our eyes. So soldiers, sing me your sapper's lullaby. You give it your all, known if you should fall, that all good things must die. These young engineers, whose job is to clear the road so we may pass, they're always out front, and when they bear the brunt, man, it happens fast. Sapper D. Smith had a wife and a son, the apple of his eye. Snowy Morland was just 21, way too young to die. So soldiers, sing me your sapper's lullaby. You give it your all, known if you should fall, that all good things must die. So go call your mother, call your old man on that welfare line, and tell him you love him while you still can, 'cause all good things must die. Soldiers, sing me your sapper's lullaby. You give it your all, not if you should fall, but all good things must die. All good things must die.
Listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park. For more great conversations, search for The Drawing Room on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.